Hello and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to yet another episode of the Footmarks podcast. I'm Behram Kazi, who you can find at Def Mango on Twitter. And with me this time, making his third appearance on Good Areas, is my colleague, Shayan Ahmed Khan, who you can find at Tweets by Shayan on Twitter. And yeah, the title for this particular episode of the Footmarks podcast is Test Legacy Like Virat's, because in a shocking revelation in this past week, or well, not so shocking depending on how you look at it, Virat Kohli has announced his immediate retirement from Test cricket, which is a format that he advocated for very, very strongly throughout his career. And Shayan, I just want to ask you, did you see this one coming?
No, not really. I mean, before the reports came, I had no idea that he was going to retire from Test, right? Like, considering his fitness and his passion to play Test cricket, more importantly. Of course, his form was on a slide. The last 10 Tests, well, they were not good at all. So, like, I really didn't think he'll retire. I really thought he'll play in England at least. But I think he decided to take the right pragmatic call here.
It's interesting. I don't know if it was the right call or the wrong call. But personally, when I first heard the news of the speculation, right, when he... Well, the article that I read mentioned that he said to his teammates in Australia multiple times that I'm done.
Yeah.
But I actually thought that he could be persuaded to not retire. And personally, I do feel that he did have a couple of more years in him. Because even a couple of those knocks in Australia, I know that he suffered some bad form, but he did also score that ton, right?
Yeah.
So it's not like he looked completely toast to me.
Yeah, so I really just think that... I didn't really think that he was going to be convinced, to be honest, because... We know how Virat Kohli is, right? Like, he's a man of his word, and if he says something, he sticks to it. And he's often said this before in interviews and podcasts, that the day I don't feel like playing, I'm not going to play. So I was pretty sure that, yeah, yeah, man, it's the end. And I don't think anyone's going to convince him here. And
I mean,
as far as, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, no, finish your thought.
Yeah, as far as his form is concerned, yeah, I think it didn't seem like he was batting too badly in Australia whenever he got going, but unfortunately, he just didn't get going a lot. Like, I think that one century in Perth, that was really good. And then he got 36 in Melbourne. And then there was that chaotic run out of Jaiswal. And then he ended up edging one behind. So that was a chaotic sequence of play. I felt that could have been one innings that if he converted, maybe if India go on to do something in that test match, maybe they save it, maybe they win it. Things could be probably different today, right? But I think a lot has to depend on how this Australia tour went, right?
Yeah.
He must have gone thinking, okay, this is Australia. This is where I've always done so well. And we'll talk about that in more depth later on. So, but it didn't work for him, right? And I'm pretty sure he would have thought this through. He didn't rush the decision. He didn't go like, okay, now it's done. He took his time. They won a Champions Trophy in the meanwhile. Both him and Rohit were there. They were, again, at the forefront of the win. They both performed in the semifinals and the finals. So, and Rohit also took retirement at the same time. So, it's been like a very similar sort of timing in a way. Like, they both retired from T20s at the same time. And now now they both have ODIs. Yeah.
No, absolutely. I mean, it's interesting how both of them are still available for ODI selection, but then no one plays ODIs anymore. So how much will they even really play? And are they looking at that 2027 ODI World Cup? These are things that we don't know in as much depth yet. But why I personally thought that he could be persuaded is because that's three big retirements in a row for India's test team, starting with Ravichandran Ashwin, then Rohit Sharma, of course, which was like less than a week before Virat.
Correct.
And then Virat himself hung up his boots in a format that he loved most. But as far as him taking a drastic decision is concerned, an almost overnight decision, I'm not surprised by that because one of his biggest mentors in cricket was MS Dhoni. So it's very Dhoni-esque. Yeah. And then his best mate is AB de Villiers. So, I mean, those guys kind of did the same thing. So I can see how, you know, Virat opted to do the same. And actually, I think I'm on record on different podcasts in the past as well, where I've said that I feel like with respect to Kohli, he's just going to wake up one day and say that I've had enough. And that's pretty much what's happened over here.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I really didn't think that, like, before the reports came out, I didn't think that he'll just retire. I thought he might go for England. He'll probably look to play. And maybe with England going with more batting-friendly surfaces because of baseball and everything, maybe he would have been able to find his form there. Maybe he would have gone to five. Like, if he could have gone to five, that would have been a move that may or may not have worked. Because if you watched him bat in the last 5 years, and his form in the last 5 years is well-documented, right? But if you've really, like, watched him bat closely, if it's a good batting surface, I don't think there is any issue with this game even now.
Like,
you go and watch the IPL, you go watch one day cricket, you go and watch most of his runs in 2023. If it's a good batting surface, he'll be good, man. Like, And if he's coming in at like a suitable entry point, then the openers have given a start. Of course, and that happens with age, right? Like, he's no longer the peak Kohli who dominated bowlers across the world, right? So,
yeah.
I think that's rational, and that's the sort of decline that you do expect. Although, with that 2023 year, it felt like maybe he might be able to pull off a comeback. He looked really good in South Africa, by the way. In 2023-24, that was the one tour which really made me optimistic. Okay, there might be a second wind here, guys. He might be able to do something. But
one thing that I didn't also see coming was the fact that Kohli is the first batter out of the Fab Four to retire from Test cricket. I honestly thought that if anything, he might prolong his Test career. That's what I was kind of, you know, hypothesizing about him before this, obviously, you know, and it's an interesting one. I actually kind of wanted to talk to you about something. It's mere speculation, but I saw some quotes from both Rohit and Kohli talk about how they're looking forward to the series in England. So something, do you think something might have happened under the rug over here?
Maybe they changed their mind, man. Like, they had time to think this through, right? And if, let's go assume the reports were right and that Kohli was saying that, I'm done now. So, maybe he took this whole time. And you remember he had this one big interview at the start of the IPL, right? Where he was talking about, like, his Australia tour and those sorts of things.
Also,
listening to that,
sorry, I'm interjecting you, but there was this one game in the Champions Trophy where he scored a ton and the presenter asked him whether he would be enjoying a week's rest. And he was like, yes, I will be, because this takes a lot out of me in now. That's the first instance where I was thinking, okay, we might be close to the end of Virat's career.
Correct. Yeah, and I think Jared also pointed that out, right? So, like, he is 36, but if you watched him bat in the Champions Trophy, he was running between the wickets really well.
Yes.
Like, he was not, it was not all about boundaries, and yet he was scoring at a very good strike rate for those conditions and those wickets.
Yeah.
He did a great job there. So, another theory was that maybe if he gets to play more ODIs, he gets into a rhythm, gets more game time, probably finds his form back in Test cricket, but that was not to be. And I think, more or less, he took the pragmatic call, to be honest. And, of course, like, as a fan of Virat Kohli, as a fan of Indian cricket, it does feel sad that such a big servant of the game has now retired from the format that he loved the most. But I think it was the right call. Like, it does feel bad, but it was the right call.
I think in his generation of cricketers, Virat Kohli has to be the biggest advocate for Test cricket, which is why it feels a bit personal, right? And of course, you know, there are many people who wanted him to get a farewell test. I don't think anyone deserves a farewell test, because now in this current World Test Championship structure, we're going to see retirements which are taken hastily because new cycles are upon cricketers, right?
Yeah.
So, like, if Kohli decides to play this series, then is he playing for 2 years? Like, maybe those are the sort of questions that come to his mind, right? So it's gotten a bit less tricky in a way that way, right?
Actually, if you remember his speech after the T20 World Cup final, he said that his decision to retire was very clear in his head. And the reason he retired was because he saw that a new crop of batters is coming and there is a 2 year cycle. He focused on that even in the recent podcast, right? So it was like, there's two more years. We want the next generation. They are ready. We want them to get the game time. So I very well think that might have been the same rationale here for both him, Rohit, Ashwin, all of these guys. They would have been like, okay, fine. We did what we had to. We had 3 shots at winning the World Test Championship. We couldn't do it. But of course, that doesn't diminish their legacy in any real way, to be honest, because of what they've achieved both home and away. So I think they would have been like, we're done. So it's time the next generation takes over.
And I mean, the love affair between Virat Kohli and Test cricket is so well documented that I feel that he personally wouldn't have wanted to overstay his welcome either, right? Like, he wouldn't want to do a disservice to the format that he held so close to his heart. And you mentioned legacy. Well, that's what this particular episode of the Footmarks podcast is all about. But before we get to the captaincy bit, because I feel like that's a massive part of this, right? I want to talk about Kohli the batter. With 123 test matches next to his name, 9,230 runs with 30 hundreds, including seven double hundreds, and then 31 fifties as well. So fantastic conversion rate, mind you. And he averaged 46.85 in the format and, well, called it a day, 770 runs shy of the 10,000 run mark. Do you find it a wee bit tragic that Kohli couldn't reach or become a part of the 10K run club?
Yeah, definitely, man. Definitely. Like, if you watched him at his peak, there is no way you would predict that he's not even going to end up making 10,000 runs, right? Like, you might think, okay, that even if there is a decline in everything, he might be able to manage and get through to 10,000 runs, honestly. But, like, I really wanted him to make 10,000 runs, to be very honest. I know it's just a milestone and probably it doesn't really matter in the larger scheme of things because of what all he has achieved. But it's a special club, right? Like, how many batters have done it? If I'm not wrong, only 16 batters or 15 batters.
Something like
and
that.
And then there are like three or four more stuck in the 9,000s. There's Amla, who also has a very similar career arc to Kohli, by the way. And then there's Graham Smith, who was also a great captain. So there are a few similarities there between some of the batters in the 9K club. But I don't really think it takes anything away massively from what they've achieved, because we've seen great batters with, what, 7,000, 8,000 runs as well. So,
and I mean,
no issues.
You've drawn a parallel with Hashim Amla over here, and I think that's very fascinating, because if you actually break down their careers, they have poor starts to their test careers, right? Both Amla and Kohli.
I would say poor, man. Like, I would say good, honestly.
Decent.
Good starts.
Average. Slightly above average starts, okay? Let's
above
put it
average.
There.
Well above average, honestly.
Okay.
Yeah. But not
fair
great,
enough, but
well above average.
I mean, up until October 2014, Virat Kohli is not averaging 14 test cricket. So you have to kind of put that in the average-ish bracket. Because
it also really depends
on... It's a batting-friendly era as well, right?
Yeah. But like, it depends on how you break down those eras, right? Like, if you want to include the Australia tour as the start of his peak, then I get what you're saying. But if you're like... Yeah. Okay, if 2016 is the start of his peak, then it's a bit different, I think. So, if let's say you're...
No. Finish your thought, sorry.
So if let's say you're just assuming that Border Gavaskar 2014, 2015 is the start of his peak, then I think you're right. Like, he was not a great test batter at that point. Like, he was decent.
I do consider that to be his peak, honestly, because that's when really took note of Virat Kohli, the test batter, especially that Adelaide test match, right? I mean, in another parallel universe or something, he wins India that test match. And there's that famous quote of his as well, where Dhoni says that, you know, you'll have to look at what your teammates are capable of as well. And he goes that if we don't try, how will we know? And I think that really defines Virat Kohli. And why I think the parallel with Amla is very interesting is because you get that peak sandwiched in between two very, maybe not very mediocre phases, but Kohli's last phase is very mediocre, right? Mm-hmm. But like his peak, which lasts for nearly 5 years, right? Take end of 2014 to maybe start of 2020 or something. He's averaging, what, 63, 65 with the bat in that peak?
Exactly.
At one point, he scores six double hundreds in or within a
18 months.
That stuff is ridiculous, right? You know, ends up with a test average or test batting average of 46.85. I know Amla also slipped below 50. And whilst as cricket nerds, we always look as 50 average or batting average of 50 as that benchmark for greatness. And you'd say that 46.85 is amazing, but maybe not as stellar. I think the record would have looked a lot different and would have been much better had Kohli not played so many of his home test matches on rank turners. But then again, Shayan, that was his call, wasn't it?
I mean, he started it, right? Like when he was the captain, I think he was the captain for what, a couple of series in 2021 against England and then against New Zealand. After that, like after the South Africa tour, he had resigned from captaincy. So, but that continued, that culture of having rank turners at home, that continued for the next few years. And definitely that those took a hit, those rank turners, they made sure that Virat Kohli, Ajinkya Rahane, Cheteshwar Pujara, all these three, they really, their averages, batting averages at home really, really suffered because of this. But, and also like, they were no longer at their peaks, right? Like they are playing on difficult surfaces past their peak, past the age of what, 31, 32. So maybe towards the end of their peak or after their peak in that sort of time period. So I think it makes sense. And that is the context that people need to look at when they're assessing his test batting average, I think. Mm-hmm. Because even away from home, he was not batting on easy surfaces, right? Like Australia became seam friendly this time, right? Like just imagine Australia of 10 years ago. If Kohli plays on those wickets today, let's say in this series, he should make more runs, right? Things would be much different if that happens. But
I think amongst Indian batters, there are only two test batters who have scored hundreds in all four Sena countries. One is Sachin Tendulkar and then the other is Virat Kohli, if I'm not wrong. And that's end of list, right? So, of course, like I do feel that, you know, when people look at that batting average, they have to consider the fact that test cricket got tougher during the pace playing pandemic. And then, of course, he was playing on very, very difficult, you know, or testing home conditions because it was turning square more often than not. But then again, that's something that Virat Kohli started because winning test matches was just so near and dear to him. And that's kind of what defines his legacy as well. But anyway, more on Virat Kohli, the test batter. And we will be back after a very short break. You guys are watching Footmarks with Behram and Shayan, and go nowhere because there's a lot of Virat Kohli that we still need to discuss. And we'll be back in some 30, 40 seconds.
Ross Taylor couldn't see at night or when the clouds were in. Eventually, he had to see an eye specialist who would fix his eyesight. In the 2 years before the change, he still averaged more than 50 in international cricket. The top level of batting talent can basically see in the dark. That is who we are talking about in our new book, The Art of Batting. Head over and order your copy today.
Welcome back to the Footmarks podcast. You guys are with Behram and Shayan. And I know that we're both itching to talk about Kohli, the test captain, Shayan, but there are some things that I want to discuss about Kohli, the test batter. We both agreed that the test average of 46.85 needs to be taken with an ounce of salt. And of course, as we know, the book just dropped, right? The Art of Batting, in which you contributed heavily. Kohli is what, number 25? I feel like that kind of checks out. What would you say?
Yeah, I think it's absolutely fair. When you put into context what he has achieved away from home, what he's done at home, he's at his peak, he's made double tons for fun. Yeah. But after his peak, of course, he's played in difficult conditions. And of course, because of that, there's been a big drop in his average. And there's no denying the fact that there was a decline as well, right?
Yes, you're
not taking
of course.
That fact away, of course. And that does affect his legacy a bit in Test cricket, because those are about 5 years. If 5 years, a batter of Virat Kohli's caliber is averaging in the low 30s, with or without context, that's just not great, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, certainly what he achieved at his peak, simply because what he did at his peak, I believe that he's an all-time great test batter. So that's absolutely no question for me. Like, I've been listening to people talk about this and how Virat Kohli's legacy as a test batter and everything. I feel like he's clear as an all-time great in test cricket. If you think about it in an Indian context, okay, let's take the conversation to India, right? How many batters would you say are definitely better than him?
I've actually conducted this exercise not too long ago, and I'd have to put Sachin up top. Number two, absolutely, I would go for Sunil Gavaskar. Number three would be Rahul Dravid. And then it comes down to Kohli versus Sehwag. And some people might take Sehwag over Kohli, who are just looking at the raw numbers, right? Because Sehwag has a higher test batting average. But Virat Kohli did not have that same weakness, or maybe not to that extent that Sehwag had versus the moving ball or the moving new ball, right? Like, he has a very, very stellar away record, Virat. I feel like if you look at his runs versus South Africa, in South Africa, he scored close to 900 runs, is it? At an average of 49.5?
Right.
Do you want to open those numbers up? Because let's go through them.
He averages 49.5 in South Africa in test.
How many runs?
I'll have to check the number of runs, actually. So
because I want to see what percentage of his total runs were scored in South Africa. It must be a fair
891 runs is my guess.
Yeah.
Because he's averaging what 400 and he's averaging what 49.5 in South Africa. And funnily enough, he was averaging well above 50 in South Africa as well. But he got out in a very meh kind of a way in the last innings when India had pretty much won the test match. So if he went not out in that innings, you would have averaged 50. And the interesting thing about the South Africa record is that he averaged 40 plus in every single tour there, right? And we know the kind of pitches that we've seen in South Africa, right? And this brings us to some of his best knocks in test cricket. Like, if you go back and look at the 2017-2018 tour of South Africa, he made, 286 runs? But the next best, who was the next best? Probably Murli Vijay or Chiteshwar Pujara from memory. But the point being that the difference of runs between between him and the next best batter was a lot for India. And he was doing the bulk of the work. He made 153 at Centurion. India had made 307. Then he made 54 and 41 in that Johannesburg test, which was on a very, very difficult surface. And it was a dangerous surface to play cricket on, to be very honest.
Yeah.
But they didn't back down. They wanted to win badly. They won that test match. Virat Kohli led from the front with the bat. His drives in that game, bro, they were so, so good. If you go back and watch that innings,
He is a terrific driver of the ball, or has been.
Of course,
What was it then? 891 runs in South Africa?
It's 891 it's 891 runs in 18 innings at an average of 49.5.
So 9% of his test match runs have been scored in South Africa at an average of nearly 50. Half a run less than 50. So it tells you that pretty much the most difficult destination or venue to bat is where Virat Kohli excelled, which goes on to lay testament to his greatness. I know the record in England is a bit dodgy. He averages around 33 over there. But if you break it down, right, there is that really poor tour first up where Jimmy Anderson absolutely exposes him. And his last or previous tour isn't amazing either, the final time that he visited England. But then if you remember 2018, man went nuts.
Yeah, he made 593 runs. Again, that was a legacy tour for him, right? In fact, that whole season
He would have won that series if not for Sam Curran.
Exactly. That is the perfect way to put it. And if not for Sam Curran, India could have really won that series, what, 3-2 probably. The one test they won, Sam Curran was not playing, funnily enough. And they lost two close matches. Edgbaston and Southampton, both of those could have been wins. And like Kohli was batting supremely well on that tour. He had some luck though. We have to accept that. The thing with test batting is that sometimes you have to acknowledge that a batter is lucky and unlucky, because no matter how good you're moving and you're batting and footwork and everything, sometimes when your luck is not with you, it's just not with you. Every time you edge, you're going to get out at times.
Yeah.
And that's what happened with him in 2014. His fall short, like, he had a very, this thing, like, low fall short per dismissal rate. Like, basically, he was getting out way sooner than he should have, right? And then the next tour, he had some luck, especially in that first innings. But I believe after that, he continued to dominate. So it wasn't like a fluke or anything of that sort. So again, his England record, I feel, of course, it's unfulfilled potential. He had the two WTC finals as well. He got starts both the times, but he couldn't really like convert and win India the game. And again, of course, it's unfair to say that one batter always wins you a game in test matches. That doesn't always happen. So that's one thing. And the 2021 tour was interesting, man. Like, if I watched that series very, very closely, okay? So he was getting 40s, 50s. He was looking in good form. He was leaving the ball well, moving well, getting like driving the ball well and all those sorts of things. But after a point, it didn't feel like he had a lot of shots on the back foot in some ways. Like, maybe because conditions were also difficult, that may have played a part in that. And I'm not a technical expert, so take that with a pinch of salt. But to be
he says this after doing tons of research on
but I'm not a technician, right? Like, I'm not a batting technician. I'm not a coach. So that's a different thing.
I've seen some batting technicians and experts point out his trigger movements off late.
Correct.
And how they haven't been particularly on point, right? So that's one thing, I suppose. I mean, I'm no technician either, but I'm just going off of what I've heard from different people. We cannot move past this particular segment of Kohli, you know, batting and performing well across the globe if we don't talk about Australia. I feel like even though his average isn't as good as it is in South Africa, but he's still averaging close to 47 runs per dismissal in Australia. And I feel like, you know, when you think of Virat Kohli in test cricket, automatically you're assuming that he's batting in Australia, isn't it? It's just that sort of a love affair.
Like, even before this podcast, I was just watching highlights of his 2014-15 Border Gavaskar Trophy. Like, he was driving, pulling, cutting every single thing. Like, he was just, that was just the peak of his batting, I believe.
You have no idea how much money I made off of Virat Kohli during the Adelaide test, where he scored twin hundreds. Because I just kept betting in his favor, and that man was just... I still feel, even though that came in a losing cause, that is the best test match Virat has ever played.
Yeah, that has to be up there with one of his most iconic performances. There's no doubt about that. And he made 256 runs, two centuries in Adelaide. And like, that's folklore stuff, man. Like, everybody knows what he's done there, right?
Yeah,
almost
absolutely.
Won India that test match.
So checks out his away record. At home, he averaged at what, 55 runs per dismissal, and that's despite the very, very difficult surfaces on which he had to play. Before we move on, he was up at
65, even 68, I think, till 2019. He was averaging like 68 at home. So I feel like he was, when the batting surfaces were good, he was just insane in India. Like, he was just scoring double hundreds for fun. Double hundreds, big hundreds. Like, he was just making runs every single, almost every single time, right? Like, and it was just that one Border Gavaskar Trophy in the middle where he had a weird funk. He didn't make runs in that series. But that series was also remembered for Kohli because of all the off-field stuff and on-field aggression and his captaincy and leadership and those sorts of things. So,
yeah,
fair enough.
I mean, if I look at Virat from the start of that Border Gavaskar series in late 2014 to, you know, COVID. Let's say COVID, right? I mean, that guy was in a surreal run of form. He looked unstoppable. I felt that this guy, everyone was talking about it, how he might surpass Sachin. Unfortunately, you know, he didn't quite come close in this format, right? In ODIs, you could make a very solid case that he is well above Sachin as well, right?
Now, I don't know, but
I mean, you know, when we did the knockout for ODI batters, I feel like the last two were Viv and Virat. And I feel like at that point, it's just what you value more, right? I actually voted for Virat. And Estelle and Jared ended up voting for Viv. So Viv won. But of course, we've talked about the good stuff. I want to talk a bit about, you know, his drop in form as well. It kind of coincided with the pace playing pandemic. The wobble seam delivery has a role to play. And then, let's be real, Shayan. It's that ominous fourth to fifth stump line that got Virat to drive over and over again, and he edged out to it quite frequently as well. It was a bit of an Achilles heel situation, wasn't it?
Yeah, definitely. It's the last tour in Australia, right? Like every single time he got out in the cordon, right? Like either to the keeper or in the slips. And every single time himself was like, okay, he's getting out outside of them. He got out, someone's like, okay, yeah, he must have gotten out. Nicking the ball, right? Like,
yeah, I mean, it was crazy.
Driving the ball, right?
The montage was crazy. I remember cricket.com.au created it, and the dismissals were just so, so similar. It was like, you know, identical stuff, carbon copy. And at that point, you felt like, okay, you know, maybe Virat, you know, is nearing the end of his career. But then again, given that Ashwin had retired and Rohit had retired and India seemed to be keen on taking Virat to England, this still has somewhat come as a shocker to me. The fact that it's done already hasn't come as a shocker. I can see him, you know, take this decision. But the timing of it is a bit weird for me.
Yeah, yeah. Fair enough, fair enough. Yeah, man, definitely that played a part in the whole pace playing pandemic. But to be honest, like, the pace playing pandemic starts in 2017, 2018, right? And 2018 was, like, one of the most difficult years to bat in test cricket. And that was the year where he excelled. So I think that was that one year which was legacy sealing for him. Like, in a true sense that, okay, now he has achieved a certain level of batting that even if there is a decline from here, you just know that he's a great player. Like, he achieved, I feel like he achieved that status right then and there. After that, after those two tours and then that 100 in Perth. Like, think about it, man. He had Centurion, Edgbaston and Perth all in one year. Like, batters would want to have that their entire careers. He did it in one year at his peak as the captain of the Indian cricket team. Like, just imagine the pressure on him every single time. So,
I mean, I actually feel like Kohli is of that breed of cricketer that actually performs better when he is captain of a side. The numbers prove it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, his test captaincy, though, that brought out the best in him as a batter. Yeah.
I feel like he was such a competitor by nature, you know. Overall, he would fight tooth and nail for every run and every run saved, and he would be celebrating his bowlers' wickets more than his bowlers themselves. And he always wanted to dominate the opposition. So Virat, in Test cricket in particular, because in ODI cricket, you know, you think of him as an accumulator and everything. But in Test cricket, he used to bat at a high-ish strike rate as well. And watching him dominate bowlers and then give them the stare that I am here to dominate you and I will win this battle. I feel like it was just such a visceral experience that for me, Virat the batter in Test cricket is kind of a fields cricketer because it's so visceral to watch him bat.
I've now seen so many people use this word for his Test batting. It was actually really wholesome to read all the tributes for his Test batting and everything. So I think this one word really stuck, like, was really common in a lot of the tributes that people were saying. And he made you feel like he's a special batter because of some of the things that he did on the field. And if you remember his Edgbaston innings, he was batting with Umesh Yadav, right? Like, he was really good at batting with the tail as well in some of these knocks. So, like, it was just special stuff, man. And honestly, then the decline starts in that New Zealand tour. I remember that tour very clearly. I remember following that tour in college as well. So, I was like, okay, now how's he going to do in New Zealand and every single thing? But that tour turned out to be really bad. Then COVID came and it's like, okay, fine. Yeah. That was a bad tour. We don't know what's going to happen. Then came the start of, towards the end of 2020, he played that knock in Adelaide in that game that India lost when he was the captain. He played a really, really good innings of 74 in the first innings. And, like, that was just outstanding batting against the pink ball. Right? Like, that was like Monk, that was like the Monk version of Kohli. That was not the aggressive, brash version anymore. If you saw him bat, he was leaving balls very well, was defending very well. The only way he got out was a run out. And unfortunately, like, that just started, probably just that match didn't end well for India. And then after that, he didn't play the rest of the matches. And then he came back home. Again, he played two really good knocks, to be very honest. He had that 72 in Chepauk and then another 62 in the next game at Chepauk. Both of these were in fourth innings, third innings with extremely high control percentages against spin bowling. And he was batting really, really well. So if you're not a numbers obsessed guy, like a Kohli fan or like just anyone who is just like 100, 100, 100, you wouldn't actually be worried about this form. If you're a pure cricket purist, and I was worried because I was like, where is the 100, man? I was just like, okay, where is the 100?
I mean, it was, not 3 years, right? Something
and,
like that.
And I was already getting impatient, bro. Like, even during, towards the end of the England series, I was like, okay, what is happening now? He's not made runs in New Zealand. He's not making runs at home. That one test in Australia was good, but like, what is happening, man? Okay, so, but he kept playing these mini masterclass knocks, like in the Test Championship final in the first innings. Then again, in South Africa, he had this one really good knock of restraint, 79 in Cape Town. He followed that up with a 143 ball, 29. That was his last test as the captain. So these few knocks, like, he had those moments, but he couldn't be consistent enough. He couldn't, I honestly think the bigger concern might have been, he didn't convert those starts. Like, he probably gets into some sort of a rhythm. And honestly, I feel like the worst that I've seen him bat in test cricket is these last 10 matches. And there is a reason for it. It's not just the numbers, okay? So if you watch him, like, game awareness is a very key part of why Virat Kohli is a successful cricketer today, right? We all agree on that. No doubt about it. But he was run out once. He was at the non-striker's end when Jaiswal was run out in MCG. Then again, there was another mix-up with, I believe, Rishabh Pant and Pune in the fourth innings. So, like, why were these things constantly repeating for a bat? And there were many other times where there was no run out, but there was, like, risky running between the wickets. Yeah. Like, you don't expect that from a 100-plus test veteran who has dominated this format, right? Like, you just, and he's, like, getting so impatient to get off strike and those sorts of things. Or just taking singles or on strike, off strike. That just, like, left a bit of a sour taste for me that, okay, what is happening, man? And honestly speaking, like,
even the time that he scored, I know he looked good during that 100, but it came at a time when India weren't in pressure at all, right? So you have to take that into context as well. And then just the mode of dismissal, the exact same mode of dismissal, I think that really highlighted.
Exact same reason, I would say. Not the same mode, because he was getting out driving, he was getting out edging the ball. So, like, those things were, like, a common pattern. And I think Scott,
you know,
if you think about it, Scott Boland, Kyle Jamieson, like, these are the sort of bowlers who are, like, not suited for him. Absolutely not suited for him. And
he is the best batter in the world to play Harris Rauf, that I believe. His game is
someone
most
like a Mitchell Johnson, right?
Yeah, express
someone like
pace.
A Mitchell Johnson.
Kohli does very
he
well with express pace. He absolutely thrives on that. Honestly, you mentioned his last 10 test matches, Shayan. I know this is pure conjecture and there's no way to prove this, but we saw some batting friendly surfaces in that India-England series in India. That's a series that Kohli missed. I feel like we might be having this discussion maybe a year later had he played that series.
Possible. A lot of people have been speculating about this series in particular. Maybe if he plays that, who knows how things end up, but it wasn't to be.
Anyway, it is still a test batting career worth remembering. And I mean, these guys ranked him 25 out of the top 50 test batters to ever play the sport or grace the sport, right? So, I mean, you guys will have your own opinions. We've discussed Kohli, the batter, in full detail. I don't think there's much left to discuss with respect to his batting alone. And now we will be taking a short break. You watching the Footmarks podcast with Behram and Shayan. And we'll be back after, a 28-second ad to talk about Virat Kohli, the test match captain.
As a cricket journalist, I would travel up to 200 days a year, and I loved every part of it, except for one, this little evil pin here, because I needed this to change my SIM card. And when you travel in cricket, you're quite often going from country to country. Don't get me started on how much this would annoy me in the West Indies, but even going from New Zealand to Australia, this pin was the worst. Well, with the Sally eSIM, they sort all of that out for you. They have an eSIM app that you install once, it's cheap, and it works in more than 160 countries around the world. No more turning up at an airport and lining up for a local SIM, trying to give over your passport and your details, and you just want to get in a taxi and go where you're going. No, Sally make it so much easier. You just download the app before you travel and you decide what kind of plan you actually need. Oh, and if you do that with our code, GOODAREAS, all one word, you get an exclusive 15% discount on Sally eSIM data plans. So go right now and download the Sally app and use the code GOODAREAS, all one word, at checkout and travel like a pro with Sally.
Welcome back to the Footmarks podcast. You guys are with Behram and Shayan. And after spending over half an hour on Virat Kohli, the test match batter, it is time to discuss his test captaincy. What is the record, Shayan? I know he's the most successful Indian captain in the history of test cricket, but I reckon, it's 48 wins?
40 wins. It's 48 games. 40 wins,
sorry. 68 games, 40 wins, 17 losses. And, you know, quite a bit of his captaincy came before the World Test Championship ever existed. And you see how there are basically no draws in there? What is there? One draw? Right?
No. That's like 11 draws.
11 draws. That's
but even
that's
in that, if you go
low
back,
number.
If you go back and look at the draws that were there in Virat Kohli's captaincy era, a lot of those were like washout games or those sorts of. Not all of the time, but they were like rain affected games and those sorts of things. I remember SCG very clearly.
Yeah.
2019, where Pujara and Pant.
Of course. The Ashwin game? No, that's Rahane's captaincy. Sorry.
That's a different game. I'm talking about the one where India won the series 2-1. They would have won 3-1 very easily if not for him. They enforced the follow-on as well. But that was the game where like it was affected by rain and India didn't win that match. That was a draw. So that is one game that I remember very clearly.
No, I mean, this is a guy, Virat Kohli, whose hunger and passion for winning games of Test cricket was unmatched, in my opinion, right? And for me, personally, Virat's Test legacy, and I know we've showered praise and even minor criticism towards his batting just now. For me, his Test legacy is defined by his captaincy and his pursuit of 20 wickets in particular. He is
correct.
The captain who made that mainstream. He was a fast bowler's captain. He also, like we were mentioning earlier, he's the one who was like, okay, let's go for ranked earners. I'm willing to sacrifice batting averages for results and victories. And I feel like that's his biggest contribution to this format.
Yeah, man, definitely. Like, he got a really good group of players who are all on the same page. They all wanted to win, right? Like, if you think about it, Virat Kohli had Ravichandran Ashwin and Ravindra Jadeja, right? So that is the exact combo that you want in India. And when you have that bowler, when you have bowlers of that caliber at home, and then away you have a really good pace batter. And of course, you have to give Virat Kohli credit in picking the right, like building a core group of fast bowlers, and of course with the help of Bharat Arun, very important part in all of this, and Ravi Shastri and the whole group, and looking towards making fast bowling the priority, right? And having multiple options. India A towards wicket. Like, the whole system was really, like, well-oiled, I would say. And Virat Kohli definitely had a big part to play in that. If you listen to people talk about him, right? Like, the bowlers that have played under him. You talk about Shami, Siraj. You talk about what Bumrah says. And then, of course, Ishan Sharma is one of his closest friends. Bhuvneshwar Kumar also has played with him for a long time. He's recently talked about Virat Kohli's test captaincy in a podcast. And he also said the same thing, that, like, the ultimate goal was to win, right? They didn't really care about, like, scoring big runs or, like, playing for draws or just, like, going through the motions. They wanted to win. They just wanted to win. And because of that, even if it meant, like, a few batting averages went a bit down towards the end of it. But honestly speaking, towards that 2016 to 2019 period, honestly, I would say 2015 to 2019 period, I would say there were two series. There was a South Africa series in 2015, late 2015. And then somewhat the Border Gavaskar Trophy of 2016-17, where batting was a little hard, but apart from that, most of the series was on good batting wickets, and the team kept getting 20 wickets regularly. The batters made a lot of runs. That was the peak of Indian Test cricket, man. Like, at home, they were just dominating on both sides of the ball.
Honestly, it just did not matter. I've been watching Test cricket since the early 2000s, right? And I have seen many Indian teams take the field. Correct. And they've won every now and then. I remember Kumble won in England, whatnot, right? Was it Dravid or was it Kumble?
Yeah, Dravid was the captain when they won the Pataudi in 2007.
Oh, okay, never mind. Anyway, correct. I do remember the series. But you know, even up until Dhoni's captaincy and towards the end of his captaincy, I was like, okay, India are a good test team, but they're home track bullies and they don't have a splendid away record. And Virat Kohli goes on and changes that. And, you know, you spoke about all those fast bowlers that thrived under him. Of course, Virat is also lucky that he had those fast bowlers at his disposal. But when you listen to Bumrah, when you listen to Shami, and when you listen to Siraj and all of these blokes, Ashwin, right? Maybe not Siraj as much, but you know what I mean, right? Ashwin is a big one. And how they shower heaps of praise on Virat, the captain. I mean, that's what really tells you that this guy had a major impact, both on the sport and his teammates. Do you think his removal from Test captaincy at the time that it came, under the circumstances that it came, was that justified given his record of 40 wins in 68 Test matches?
I think that was, like, really, really shocking for me, to be very honest. Like, unlike his Test batting retirement, which was because of the reports, it felt like, okay, this is going to happen, right? But Test captaincy just came out of nowhere. And honestly speaking, I was just calculating in my head, okay, India lost the South Africa series, but what can they do in the upcoming games? Can Kohli end up as the captain with the most amount of Test wins ever? Because Graham Smith is at, what, 53, I believe? Isn't he?
Yes, I think so.
Graham Smith is number one with 53 wins, if I'm not wrong. And if Kohli wanted to, I don't think anybody could have stopped him from, like, stopped the team from achieving that landmark under him. And they were doing really, really well. Of course, they didn't win in South Africa. That was one thing that, of course, he would have felt really bad about. But the thing was that they fought hard, man. They fought hard every single country. They played to win. That was the most important thing. Of course, I believe like that one aberration would be the New Zealand tour, where it just didn't go well for the entire team. They lost pretty convincingly. Even then, I believe there was one of the tests where the lead wasn't much. And then after that, like India just like didn't win that game. So and the WTC final was a bit of a missed opportunity. But more or less, I think the legacy of Virat Kohli, the test captain, is really in those two wins in London, right? In 2021, Lords and Oval. Those are the two wins. And of course, Johannesburg in 2018, Bangalore in 2017 against Australia. These 4-5 test matches, like, they really tell you about the... They tell you the story of Virat Kohli, the test captain, right?
And no, absolutely honestly, they do, man.
What was your favorite test win under... Like, what do you think was your favorite test match to watch under Virat Kohli, the test captain? Like, was it Lords or Oval or something else?
It might be Lords, man. You know?
Yeah, so I think... But I think I also have Lords like really high.
There's also the thing that it was played at Lords. Like, you know how Lords test matches are? They just mean more. And you kind of stamp your authority a bit more as well.
I honestly think I enjoyed Oval a lot as well. And I'll tell you the reason why. Because there was a lot of criticism around Virat Kohli not picking Ashwin, right? And people need to understand that sometimes, like, there are team selections done purely for the sake of the team. It's not to suggest that player A or player B is not that good. And unfortunately, the way the sport is structured, you just know that some bowlers have to sit out. And they wanted to go in with a more aggressive four fast bowler strategy. And then, of course, going with Jadeja as the lone all-rounder, he was the better batter. Even if you could argue that Ashwin is the better spinner. But Jadeja himself did a really good job holding one end in terms of the economy in that Oval Test, especially in the fourth inning. So that game, and nothing was happening in that game. And I was like, okay, is this really going to be a draw? And everywhere, if you were on Twitter, you would just see people are like, where is Ashwin? Where is Ashwin? Kohli, you don't know how to captain and all those sorts of things.
That was all the rage at that time. I mean, they would have won that test series, Cheyenne, if not for you-know-what happened, right? Everyone left for the IPL and then they came back.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure that the run of form that they were in, and they could have even won the test match that happened so like months later if they weren't bestowed. Which actually brings me to a fun point. Yeah, it actually brings me to a very fun point. Now, Virat Kohli is known for his antics on the field, right? I'm not even talking about his celebrations when his bowlers take a wickets at this point. I'm talking about a young, you know, and full of unabashed arrogance sort of Virat Kohli playing in Australia and showing the middle finger to a packed Australian crowd, you know. Early days, though. Of course, just now that I've recounted the Bairstow test, he had a very animated verbal battle with Johnny Bairstow in that one. And then his test captaincy kind of comes to an end when he is screaming at the stumps. So, you know, there is that side of Kohli as well. How do you look at that? A lot of people kind of justify it by saying that he always wanted to pick a fight with the opposition to kind of switch himself on. How do you view all of it?
See, I think as far as the Bairstow incident is concerned, I feel like those are the sorts of things that happen at times in the heat of the test match. And it's not always about whether it's the right thing or the wrong thing. And of course, like the whole incident in South Africa, that was not ideal. And shouting at the stumps and all, that was all not needed. Then KL Rahul saying 11 men.
Exactly. That got a bit over the top. And they kind of
that's
got a lot of negative.
That's unnecessary. Don't get me wrong.
It was unnecessary. All of that was unnecessary. It got them a lot of negative PR. Kohli gets sacked right after, and I don't think screaming at the stumps helped.
But not because of that.
Yeah, I know he didn't get sacked because of that, but it didn't help, did it, that this guy was screaming at the stumps. Anyway,
resigned from test captaincy on his own, right? Like, officially, that is
We don't know behind the scenes. Officially, that happened, but you saw the presser. And anyway, I'm not going to get into conspiracy theories over here. We're here to talk about Kohli's legacy. You know, I just wanted to present a different angle to this, right? People might look at all of this stuff negatively. And I mean, there's only really one way to look at screaming at the stumps. But as far as flipping the crowd is concerned, right? Sure, it's not a good thing to do. But then again, Australian crowds can be very, very hostile.
Racist.
And racist. Throw that in as well. And
we've seen Siraj, right? You remember that tour of 2021?
We've seen Siraj. We've seen other instances as well. I mean, there's plenty to go by. But there's another side to that coin where here's an Indian player who is giving it right back to you. And with Virat Kohli's tattooed and, you know, arrogant or confident nature, a new India is born. And he's a big part of that. In fact, I feel like he is the most integral cog of India reimagined as a cricketing nation. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, he is the face of Indian cricket. He is the face of world cricket, right? Like, You listen to all these American podcasters talk about who has the most Instagram followers and everything, and Virat Kohli's name always comes up, and they're like, okay, how does he have more followers than LeBron? And those sorts of things. So, yeah, man, he, of course, and Jared has also talked about this, how the Olympics, like how Virat Kohli has played an important role. Like Virat Kohli's legacy has played, definitely played a role in the Olympics, cricket being included in the Olympics side. Of course, now he himself can't play it, but that's one of his legacies, I believe. If you actually a really good, like Shane Warne after the Oval Test, he had a really good like segment on Virat Kohli's legacy in general as a cricketer, as a test captain. And he ended with saying, Virat Kohli, keep playing test cricket for a long, long time. That is what his words were. And yeah, man, like, Shane Warne himself was the biggest showman of test cricket. And probably after
we
him, you would have to say it's...
We were, so just to give people a little bit of backstory, we were kind of trying to come up with a nice title for this podcast, and we came up with a load of bullcrap. We ended up with test legacy like Virat's, but then, you know, in the middle somewhere, I floated around test cricket's greatest showman, and I was like, hold up, that might be Warne. But it's not like Virat is far behind, right? He is
absolutely.
Guy. He is him. If you will. And you know what? You speak of him as a brand. He might be the biggest individual brand the cricket has ever seen. He wasn't a team. He was a one-man show, and he was a crowd puller like no other. And you know who's going to bear the brunt of that the most? The ECB this
the
coming
ECB.
Summer. Because no Kohli, no Rohit. I mean, that's going to be somewhat of a hit as far as crowd expectations are concerned.
Definitely.
Absolutely. Anyway, there is more that I want to talk to you about Virat as test captain, of course, and generally as a cricketer. But we will be taking another short break. You guys are watching Footmarks with Bairam and Shayan, and go nowhere, because there's still some stuff about Virat Kohli, the test cricketer, that we need to discuss. 1 minute, 10 second ad break. Here we go, and we'll be back.
Cricket media used to be pretty simple. Find your favourite newspaper, head to Crick Info, and maybe a blog you'd like. Now just finding the best stories and writing is a huge challenge. You already have a job. You just want to read about cricket. Well, that is what the best of cricket is currently doing. They go out daily to find the newest cricket coverage and the best stories from any publication in the world. And when they can't discover what they want, they also hire some of the best writers to produce their own great stories. You can get the best of cricket via their website or on WhatsApp. They find cricket's best stories and give them to you every day.
Welcome back to the Footmarks podcast. You guys are with Bairam and Shayan. Now, we've spoken a bit about Virat Kohli, the test captain. And if you go by the numbers, win percentages and all of that, 40 wins out of 68 test matches with, 17 losses and 11 draws. He is India's most successful test captain as far as the numbers are concerned. But I'm going to put you on the spot and ask you, Shayan, is he India's best test captain ever?
Yeah. For me, it's not even a question. Of course, I've mostly seen just his captaincy and the last phase of Dhoni's test captaincy.
Yeah.
So I only have those two things to go by from what I've seen with my own eyes. But based on whatever I've read, whatever literature I've consumed around cricket, whatever I've watched, whatever my intuition tells me, I think there is no doubt in my mind that Virat Kohli is India's best test captain. And not just India's. I would even go out on a limb and say he's Asia's best test captain ever. So if you're making like an Asia all-time test 11 and you need a captain, you know where to look. Like, that's definitely one of the options.
Yeah, I mean, he's an option. Definitely an option. I'm not going to deny that.
Yeah.
Personally, I'm confused. Look, Virat had resources that MS Dhoni did not, right? MS Dhoni did not have the fast bowlers that Virat had. And I do feel like if you look at them both overall, I would take Dhoni's brain over Kohli. But then again, there is no way to prove that Dhoni would have done as well as Virat has with the resources that Virat has had. So for me, it's a tough one between the two. I know that Jared has picked Dhoni. I know this from one of the quick picks that we've done in the past. But then again, I feel like it all comes down to how people look at it. It is rather subjective, this particular question. I don't think it's entirely objective. But I know you're a Kohli super fan, so I really wanted to ask you that one, right? And maybe you weren't even the right person to do this podcast with, but I'm just fucking with you. On that note, though, Shayan, you are a Kohli super fan. Do you feel that he deserved a farewell test?
Like, it's a tough one to answer, right? Like, of course you want to see your favorite player go off with, on a high with a farewell and those sorts of things. Like, the T20 World Cup win, it felt so special. Of course, it was not... We didn't know beforehand that this was going to happen, but it felt so special because of how it all ended, right? There's this sour feeling that, okay, that Australia tour, the country where he had the best of his times, some of the best of his times. And it didn't end well for him. India lost. It was like the end of an era, basically.
Yeah.
With so many players retiring. The home series that they lost just before that.
Hmm.
It felt like, of course, it felt really bad and everything. But I don't think, like, in as you said, in the WTC era, what is a farewell test, right?
Yeah, like,
where do you
that's
play
true.
That farewell test?
That's the perfect answer to this. Because, right, you have to think of the betterment of the team. And there are cycles
exactly.
in test cricket now. So what's the point of starting a cycle if you can't finish it? And I'm quite certain when Virat was taking this decision, he thought, I don't see myself playing this format 2 years later. So what's the point in hogging a spot? Let India,
exactly.
you know, start afresh. And I actually respect him quite a bit for that because
absolutely.
We know he loves this format. He's been on record, you know, expressing his adulation or adoration for test cricket. I'm losing out on my adjectives even. But anyway, one more thing that, you know, I've noticed with Virat is that Virat Kohli, the test captain, didn't always get along with everyone in terms of the coaching staff. He gets along brilliantly well with Ravi Shastri. But then, if you ask me from a third person's perspective, I kind of see Shastri as someone who makes sure that the environment of the dressing room is, you know, A1. And he doesn't,
correct.
You know, interfere all too much and is a bit of a yes man. We saw Virat butt heads with Anil Kumble. So do you think that he was relatively a tough cricketer to kind of work with? Or captain?
See, he didn't really have any issues with Rahul Dravid, right? Like, towards the end of his test captaincy. And of course, he's credited Rahul Dravid so many times. And honestly, I think a lot is made of the Kumble situation, the whole Kumble incident, simply because of the fact that if you look at whatever interactions they've had after that, it's very professional. Yes, it didn't end on a good note. But they were both ultimate professionals who knew that, okay, fine. It didn't end well. And of course, from the reports I read, from whatever I could tell, it did also feel like the team... It was not just Virat Kohli, right? The team had raised concerns about, like, maybe they didn't want a stronger coach like Anil Kumble. Maybe they wanted someone more laid back like Ravi Shastri. Again, all of this is just pure conjecture. So that there's that one side of it. And of course, that was one incident that did leave a bit of a sour taste. There's no doubt about that. But apart from that, I feel like a lot is made of that. Do you really think he's had any other issues with any other captains or coaches throughout his whole...
I personally feel that Virat Kohli might have been the sort of leader who enjoyed autonomy, and maybe there were times where he didn't particularly like his autonomy to be questioned, and the circumstances under which he lost his test captaincy. I mean, there was a lot in the media those days. I don't know much, right? This is all pure conjecture to me, and if we've learned anything in the past few days is that you take anything that the media tells you with like a kg of salt anyway. They always try to blow things out of proportion. But then again, I also feel like if you look at it this or look at this from another angle, the guy had high standards. And you know what? Virat Kohli wasn't just a big advocate for test cricket. He was also a massive, massive advocate for fitness. And he set extremely high standards for his team in that regard. And I feel like that's a major part of his legacy as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Fitness, fast bowling culture. Those are the things that you attribute to him as a test captain. Going for the win, that mindset of, okay, we're not here to just like draw test matches or play for the draw, play safe and any of that sort of cricket. They just wanted to win, man. And they had a pretty good winning record. Of course, like at home, they never lost a series at home under him. As far as away series concerns, they won in Australia. They led 2-1 in England under him. Then, of course, there was that Australia tour where he wasn't there, but there was definitely some sort of an imprint of his legacy, his style of leadership. And of course, we talk about Ravi Shastri being a yes man to Virat Kohli, but then we have to give him credit for that tour, right?
No, of course
when
you
Ajinkya
do.
Rahane was there.
Yeah.
So he might have been a yes man for all we know. Sure, I'm more than willing to accept that. But the fact is that the two did what was best for Indian cricket. And in test match cricket, I feel like they're... Heart was, of course, even in white ball cricket, their heart was always in the right place. They wanted to win and everything. Of course, they couldn't end up winning white ball tournaments. And we've seen the coaches after that win titles. Two back-to-back under Rohit Sharma with Gautam Gambhir and Rahul Dravid being the coach. So, white ball cricket, definitely there's some more scope for criticism as to how, in terms of tactics and everything. But in red ball cricket, okay, you can question that he probably chopped and changed around a bit too much in his early days of captaincy. But then... towards the end, he was getting criticized for backing Ajinkya Rahane and Pujara too much. So,
it's crazy how, you know, more recently everyone was like, where is Pujara and where is Rahane? Like, no one is ever happy with anything, right? But then again, you know, look, you mentioned white ball, but then again, that's probably stuff for another podcast another day. And then again, even if he didn't lift a trophy, an ICC trophy in white ball cricket as captain, he's just won back-to-back tournaments, right? The Champions Trophy and the T20 World Cup.
In white ball cricket, and then, of course,
early days, he has an ODI World Cup as well. The one trophy that has evaded Virat Kohli, though, is that Test Mace. And that's probably, like, you would think that he might have really, really wanted that one. And, of course, Rahul Dravid, before he, called time on his coaching career with the Indian national team, he even, you know, mentioned to Virat that, you know, that's three check boxes ticked and now go get that last one. And he's obviously referring to that Test Mace. And now we know that that Test Mace will evade Virat Kohli. Yeah. And this guy had two bites of the cherry. One of them came as captain as well. Does that kind of slightly tarnish his legacy in Test cricket?
Yeah, it's a bit of like an incomplete thing, you can say. But if you really think about it, like from a holistic point of view, India, from 2015 to 2022, they were the best test team in the world under him. They were undefeated at home. They did really, really well away. Even when they lost away, they lost close games. So I think there is absolutely no doubt in my mind that that test captaincy as a whole was a successful reign. There is no doubt about that. But
I mean, even if you ask me, despite the fact that India haven't lifted the test mace yet, if you look at the last decade in test cricket, I would say they're the best team. And Virat Kohli is a very, very integral cog in all of that. Maybe not as integral a cog as the bowlers, because I feel like Ashwin, Bumrah, Jadeja are probably more important. But Virat Kohli comes with his mindset, his approach, the way he kind of gets his troops to perform on the field and the way he marshals them. And of course, he's changing the overall mindset of Indian cricket. And he does that not just by his captaincy, but the way he actually plays the sport.
And speaking of the Test Mace, actually, they did win the ICC Test Championship or whatever that was called at the time, the Test Mace, in 2017, 2018 and 2019. Like, they had those 3 years, three seasons where they held the mace for three consecutive seasons. So
true.
As far as, like, if you want, if you're like a fan of him holding that World Test Championship
mace. Yeah, I mean,
mace,
of course.
You can see that.
I mean, Misbah held that mace as well.
Yeah.
But of course, when the World Test Championship came about, India were a team that took it really seriously. And I feel like Virat Kohli was the main protagonist of that push. That is something that has evaded him. And
I feel it's a missed opportunity for sure.
I also look at it as something that doesn't exactly tarnish his legacy one bit, but it is that one little, you know, little checkpoint that
incomplete.
He just couldn't kind of, it does kind of leave his test career a bit incomplete. For me, that's a bigger one than the 10,000 run club, honestly.
Yeah, I think both are quite important in their own respects. But
this is a guy who's obsessed with winning, right?
Winning, exactly. So I don't think he's really going to bother about 10,000 or 9,000 or whatever that is. But I think he would have really wanted to win that test championship, that 2021.
And you know what?
They played a really good New Zealand team.
Prior to the New Zealand series that India played at home, weirdly enough, we were all like ready to bet our life's earnings on the fact that India will be playing a third test World Test Championship final in a row. And that somehow doesn't end up happening. And now, of course, he doesn't want to continue on for the next cycle. But here's an interesting one for you. Since 1992, one of Sachin Tendulkar or Virat Kohli have been batting at number four for Indian tests. And those are massive boots to fill. Who do you think are likely candidates? I'm hearing a lot of Shubman Gill. I don't know if that's the right call. I'm actually not even sure what the right call is, honestly.
I'm probably also in the Shubman Gill camp, to be honest. I've always felt like he's more of a number four, number five in Test cricket. Purely based on his batting style, attacking batters, free stroke maker. I don't think he's like... My personal opinion is that he's not best suited to play against the new ball in the top three. Of course, we've now seen that he's started doing well at home. And he got a bit unlucky in Australia by missing out on the two test matches where India had good batting wickets, relatively at least, MCG and Perth.
Yeah. Yep.
So that was a bit of an unlucky scenario for Shubman Gill. But I really think he is the man who is supposed to take the team forward at number four. And we are also hearing that he's likely to be the captain. So I think Shubman Gill at number four, captain of the Indian test team, I'm ready.
Those are some strong endorsements by Shayan, of course. I'm confused. There's KL Rahul as well in the mix, and I feel like he could slot in all right at number four. But then again, he's not a long-term
fix. But then why do you want to change his opening slot, right? Like, his position keeps... And then who opens for you, right? Like, if KL Rahul... True. Let's say KL Rahul is number four. Who's going to open with Jaiswal? So I think in my mind, I have a rough idea of the sort of team that I want to see for England. I'll go ahead and just reveal that. So
yeah, I think go for it.
Jaiswal and KL Rahul would be opening for me. One down, I'd be interested in giving Sai Sudarshan a go based on whatever we've seen.
Not just him. You, Ravi Shastri is also team Sai Sudarshan. I kind of am as well, but that may be my that might be my bias as well, because we've done so much work on Sai Sudarshan. So feel closer to him, weirdly.
Yeah.
He's my favorite Sai out of Kishore, Sudarshan and the Oppa Gangnam style guy.
All right.
Yeah. So yeah. You have Sai at 3 and then Shubman Gill at 4.
Then I have Gill at 4. Then number 5 is a bit of an open spot for discussion. Mm-hmm. I feel like... So for starters, I would have Rishabh Pant at 6. Okay, because I don't think that Rishabh Pant should be batting at 5 anymore. Not because he can't, but simply because of the fact that it's just too much workload on him as the wicketkeeper, and he has to keep saving the team with the bat. It's not
sustainable,
man, honestly.
What about Shreyas Iyer?
I don't mind Shreyas Iyer at all at number 5. I don't mind Iyer at 5. I have a few more options. Sarfaraz Khan, there's Devdutt Padikkal, there's Karun Nair, there's multiple such
Karun
options.
Karun Nair is a really interesting one, isn't it? Imagine
because he's in form, man.
Yeah, I mean,
do you want to make the most of that form? That is one way to look at it.
How many test matches has Karun Nair played after the 100?
He would have played, I believe, 3 or 4 more games, I think.
But this is the guy who scored, a triple ton on test match debut, wasn't it? So
wasn't it his second game or was it his?
It might have been his second game. I can't quite remember, but he does have a test match triple ton, and he did well in the IPL. Not that that is any sort of barometer for how well he would be as a test player, but he's got the numbers in first class cricket, he's been in good form in Ranji. It's going to be interesting what India do here on, but I feel like we can discuss that whenever
there is a bit of a radical take. I think if they want. They could consider pushing Nitish Reddy up at number 5 and playing Jadeja at 7. And the reason why I'm saying that is because Nitish has showed you his potential in Australia, right?
Yeah.
You know that this is a guy who... And I'm a strong believer in India going in with like 3 specialist fast bowlers and Kuldeep Yadav. He's my spinner. There is no doubt in my mind against England in the basketball series that those are the 4 bowlers, 3 quicks and Kuldeep Yadav. That is the combination I'm going with. So if let's say we have number 7, so... At number 7, you need to play an all-rounder. You have multiple options now. You have Jadeja, you have Akshar, you have Washington Sundar, depending upon what you prefer for those conditions. Nitish Reddy, of course. So the bit of a risky thing,
Shardul's right on the batting. There, right? Don't forget Shardul Thakur.
Shardul, I wouldn't have Shardul in the top 7, though. That is the thing.
That's true.
I don't mind him at 8 completely, but then again, would Shardul be the third pacer? Do you want him for the whole 5 test seed, 5 matches? Because if you remember... In that 2021 series, when Shardul was doing really well, he was often the fourth pacer.
I don't think he could be a third pacer by any means. And I agree that I would rather have him at 8. But anyway, this podcast is not about all of this, and we can save it for the preview or whatever.
Cricket 8 brings you this show. They are analysing every part of our game. Head over for their watch-alongs, podcasts, and articles on what is really happening on the field and why it matters. Cricket8.com is your place for cricket intelligence.
I suppose we've discussed everything that there is to discuss with respect to Virat Kohli's test match legacy. I guess I'll kind of sum it up what his legacy is to me, and then you can kind of maybe follow through or just agree or add to it or state your own, what his test match legacy means to you. But for me, Virat Kohli is the fourth best batter to come from India to play the format. I would say I would have him above Sehwag, right? And I would also like to think that, look, amongst cricketers from his generation, he is the biggest advocate and endorser of Test cricket, at least in the modern era. I don't think anyone has spoken on the importance of Test cricket as much as Virat. His willingness to sacrifice his batting average for Test wins also kind of throws more weight behind that notion. And of course, that relentless pursuit to get 20 wickets by hook or by crook. I feel like that is really what defines his legacy in this format for me. But from like a cricket watching perspective, it all just comes down to the passion and hunger that he displayed with respect to, playing this format and winning games of Test cricket. It was unmatched like no other. And again, we'll come back to that same word that was used earlier, visceral. Watching Virat just be on the field in Test cricket was a visceral experience for me. And, Test cricket is going to be poorer with him having hung up his boots.
So, I really think that Virat Kohli's Test legacy, and a lot of people have given their tributes and everything. And of course, the way people perceive him as a Test player also has this very varied opinions on him as a Test player, I feel, because some people are like, okay, he doesn't average 50. How can he be a great Test batter? Right? This is one of the things that I've been encountering in the last few days. And I'm like, okay, you need to really look at what he has done at, in his peak. Yeah. In his peak, he was dominating on tough wickets, tough batting wickets away from home. That 2018 season, as I said, that is the legacy ceiling season for him, to be very honest. And the way he led from the front with the bat and then sealed off that whole season with the win in Australia, right? Mm. So, I think that entire season is his legacy. Definitely no doubts about it. Then, of course, his batting, like, as far as his batting is concerned, the decline phase was like, yeah. Mm. But even when you saw him bat, some of the innings when he was playing really well, you could just feel it. Like, he was batting so well. Sometimes.
No, absolutely. But, and you know, one thing has just come into my mind. Another thing that has to be a part of his legacy is to take time off for personal reasons. This is something that wasn't normal before Virat Kohli, and he normalized it, right? And I feel like it's a good thing because family comes first, and he has always put his family first, right?
Really as dedicated
as he has been to Indian cricket and his career. I love that about him.
Absolutely. It just shows that he's an utter professional who loves his family and he knows how to balance time on and off the cricket. So if you hear a lot of people talk about him, they're like, okay, on the field, he's like the fiercest competitor we've ever played against. But off the field, he's like the nicest guy. He's so warm. Mm. He's so chill off the field and everything. So definitely, man, I think that really sums up the sort of player that he has been in this format. And I hope people will... Like, and I often hear, and this was the same thing during Sachin Tendulkar's retirement as well. Like, people are like, okay, we'll not watch this format anymore. But if you're really a fan of him and the legacy that he has created,
you'll watch this format more.
You should be following the format even more after that.
Yeah, so absolutely.
There's no doubt in my mind.
That was his biggest message, I feel. And you know, from an opposition team's perspective, although Pakistan never got to play him in Test cricket, and I feel like that's very, very tragic. It's an absolute pity that both Rohit and Virat have retired without playing a single Test match versus Pakistan.
That was a generation, in fact.
Yeah, and I don't see any other cricketer playing a Test match versus Pakistan either. But that's besides the point. My point over here was that from an opposition team's perspective, he was probably the guy that everyone loved to hate. But as his career evolved, I don't think he was that guy, man. I think that Kohli just drew love left, right and center, and he has massive fan bases across the globe. I don't think there's a lot of hate for Virat Kohli at all. And it's the way he carried himself, it's the way he matured, and it's the way he passionately spoke about the game as well. It's not just on-field stuff. When Kohli spoke, we listened. And I feel that also kind of has to be packaged into the whole legacy bit. But anyway,
absolutely,
I feel like that settles it, Shayan. Yeah. Anything else you want to add before we call it a day?
Yeah, man, I just think that you talked about where he ranks among the greatest Indian test batters. And of course, there's often this debate that Sehwag, and for me, it's like, okay, both of those are my favorite cricketers. two of my favorite cricketers, Virendra Sehwag and Virat Kohli. So, but I think I would also just say that he's the fourth greatest Indian test batter of all time.
Yeah.
And Sehwag is fifth for me. So that's what I would like to say.
I think there can be consensus on that because you can't put Kohli ahead of Sachin, Gavaskar and Dravid.
You know what? If people really want to say that Sehwag is a better test batter than Kohli, I don't mind that. Like, I'm willing to see that argument. But I'm personally on the Kohli camp in this one.
Yeah. I mean, it comes down to what you value. And I feel like Kohli's away performances all over outweigh Sehwag's, even if he averages 2.5 runs less.
But for Sehwag, I feel like you forgot one important point, his strike rate.
Yeah, of course.
He could change games of cricket really soon. That also has to be taken into account.
I've seen Kohli be the aggressor in Test cricket as well. I know that he's done pretty much everything. Yeah. But that Kohli, like prime Kohli would come and he would also
his best knocks were counter-attacking knocks. If you remember like the first 10 balls, 15 balls, he did like 3-4s, 4-4s, straight drive, on drive, pull, everything.
That's kind of how I made all of that money on him, dude. Like I'm telling you, like I could just, you know, it was a safe bet that, Virat is going to come and he's going to show off a bit. And that's what we kind of loved about him as well. And you couldn't take your eyes off the screen when he was batting. And go well in retirement, Virat. And best of luck with the remainder of your cricketing career from the Good Areas team.
I think I'll just ask you one question to end this podcast. Do you think he is playing the 2027 ODI World Cup? Just yes or no. What is it? Like Sunny,
Sunny G thinks he won't be. I think he will be.
They won't. You think he will?
I think he will be.
I think he will,
I think he's going to stretch himself.
The way I'm seeing it, I'm feeling it. I think he's going to play till that 50 overs ODI World Cup. And he's also looking to complete this whole IPL cycle based on everything that we've heard.
I think he's going to play a lot more IPLs. But as far as that ODI World Cup is concerned,
but he is definitely,
I feel like I feel like both him and Rohit have a sour taste in their mouth from the previous ODI World Cup, and this is a title that they really want to get their hands on.
Who knows what, so, if they won that, maybe they retired then. Maybe they wanted to prolong tests. Who knows?
Yeah, plus, you know, I'm not going to be surprised if the BCCI goes on and schedules a shit ton of ODI cricket now, because obviously you want to, everyone wants to watch
like there are
Kohli and Virat
30,
play.
35 ODI schedules.
Sorry, I said Kohli and Virat play. I meant Rohit and Virat play.
I feel like there are, what, 30, 35 ODI scheduled till the next World Cup. So, I feel like it's not less. They might increase the number. Of course, it's less compared to what we used to see, peak ODI cricket. And
I mean, it's still a lot more if you compare it to other nations, buddy.
fair enough. Yeah. Yeah. So, if 30, 35 ODIs, I feel like they'll give themselves 1 year. Both Rohit and Virat, they'll give themselves 1 year. They'll be like, okay, fine. Let's see how this goes. If we're still we're feeling it well in one-day cricket, let's go for it. And if not, India still has talented batters, we'll be able to make our way. I feel like that is the sort of mindset that they're going ahead with. And it's really refreshing to see both of them. They put the team first here, man. Like, for all the selfless, selfish, all the sorts of narratives that keep going around, they're both team players, man, ultimately. And that is what you respect.
Yeah, absolutely. And those were my thoughts and Cheyenne's thoughts on Kohli's test match legacy, and also we both think that he will continue to play on in ODIs and will probably feature in the 2027 ODI World Cup. Let us know what Virat Kohli's test legacy means to you in the comment section below, and whether you think he will be playing in that ODI World Cup or not. But that kind of wraps this episode of the Footmarks podcast up. And just a quick reminder to all of you, you can go to goodareas.co and bookmark that webpage. And that can prove to be your one-stop shop for all the fun work that we do as part of our team, whether it be written content, videos, or podcasts. We'll be back soon enough on some other show. Might be, you know, Crick Picks, might be a Kimapa show, a live show, another Footmarks, who knows. But we've got lots and lots of content planned for you. That's all for today, though. Have a good one and goodbye.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bairam Kazi and Estelle Vassadevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recordings. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make a lot of content like me, oh, you are going to need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up incredible clips from your podcasts and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.